The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, technically, we're at a world at peace. At least a dozen shooting wars, though, are going on, large and small, and they're in progress every single day around the globe. Though the big powers talk about detente, and we talk about arms limitations, we hope for a new era of peace. We, however, see the incredible spectacle of the one nation that calls more loudly for arms limitations, for defusing and dearming the dangerous problems of this world, and somehow halting the incredible march toward oblivion of World War III, a nuclear bomb war, yet the United States of America remains the largest trafficker in arms, way ahead of the Soviet Union. It reminds me of the prophecies of the book of Jeremiah, where the seers of the land were purported to say, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. Right now, battlefields all around the world blaze and rage, with the sporadic sound of mortars, of rockets, of bombs, of submachine guns and rifles. Indochina, the Mideast, Northern Ireland, Iraq, Ethiopia, the Philippines, Burma, Thailand, Malaysia, Taiwan, Rhodesia, Argentina, Malagasy. To specify some of these, one of the world's costliest, bloodiest, and longest battlefield wars continues in Vietnam and Cambodia with no end in sight. An estimated 2 million Vietnamese and Cambodians have died since the start of that Indochina war in December 1946. More than 100,000 foreigners, including 55,000 Americans, have also been killed there. In the Middle East, every single day, we wonder whether this morning will be the breakout of a new war. We hear threats and counter-threats, charge and counter-charge, attempted step-by-step negotiations, or the firm resolve there will be no negotiations. Mr. Kissinger takes trip after trip after trip. The Soviet Union is in the act. Every European government, it seems, is becoming involved, especially Bonn. And by the way, there's an article in the current number of The Plain Truth about Bonn's Mideast Balancing Act, how it gets harder by the day, that you'll want to read. So only a really fragile truce exists between the regular armies of Israel and its Arab neighbors since October 1973, the Yom Kippur War. Arab guerrillas make frequently regular forays over Israel's northern border. Israel responds with commando attacks on suspected Palestinian strongholds. It's charge and countercharge. Guerrillas here and there, or Arab members, either illegitimate or professed legitimate members of Al-Fatah or some other of the guerrilla groups like Black September or others, hijack aircraft. I told you about the young American girl whose leg was amputated as a result of a grenade thrown at a tour bus. I said I waited in vain for any official spokesman of the United States government to decry that illicit and incredibly murderous act, but no such public statement ever was forthcoming. It was just in the news. It happened. It was something that was reported from Jerusalem. The girl and her family were over there. She was in the hospital. They removed the leg. She had a particularly fatalistic point of view. She was a Baptist young girl. She looked upon it as some act of God, thought maybe her contribution in life would be even greater. You had to admire her courage. But on the other hand, you wonder why we're so strangely silent while American civilians on harmless religious pilgrimages can have their legs shattered by blasts, and not even a senator or anybody, would you believe, a mayor, a governor, nobody speaks out about it. Well, the Middle East remains a potential trouble spot and is being fed and fueled more so all the time. For example, you've heard about the Shah of Iran. He's the man who's in a great hurry to rebuild the Persian Empire. He's got the money to do it. He wants to do this before he himself is of such age that he cannot, and before, of course, the proven oil reserves of Iran run out. He knows that by the 1990s that's going to occur. He wants to, at the rate of $2 billion a month income right now, see to it that he amasses such fantastic concentrations of modern sophisticated weaponry and of a modern army that he is even coming to the United States and asking private firms to hire mercenaries to go over there to train a gigantic Iranian army. And by the hundreds, they're responding. For instance, right in Alhambra, in the Los Angeles area recently. The switchboard of the Vinnell Corporation had been deluged with inquiries since it had been reported nationwide on network television that that firm had been offered a $77 million Pentagon contract. Our own Pentagon offering a private firm the contract to train Saudi Arabian National Guardsmen. The United States is going to train oil guards to guard the oil wells of Saudi Arabia against the United States if we ever had to use force, as Mr. Kissinger said we might, in the event that there was some future strangulation of our source of oil. Meantime, Iran is receiving large shipments of tanks from the British Army of the Rhine, tanks from the United States, sophisticated F-14 Tomcat fighter jets from the United States, and, of course, Iranian pilots are being trained at U.S. Air Force bases. Vinnell Switchboard down here in Alhambra said they had more than 300 calls during the day. As a matter of fact, James DeSimone, who was the vice president, said they weren't going to discuss the program, they weren't going to give interviews, and they felt that would be inappropriate because some public officials had called, apparently, for the Senate to probe this contract that had been granted by the Pentagon to this private firm. They wanted a 1,000-man training force, and those are going to be made up largely of Vietnam veterans, of former United States military men, no doubt some of them of sergeant and higher rank, who now as private citizens will form a cadre to go over there to Saudi Arabia to train those Arabs on how to use modern American weapons in order that they could probably give a far better accounting of themselves when and if the United States ever invades Saudi Arabia. And if we do, and they already have those modern sophisticated TOW, that's the tank destroying but personnel carried, not unlike a bazooka, but I think smaller, perhaps lighter weight, but far more powerful. It's a tank-destroying, anti-tank weapon that can be carried by an infantryman. And we are sending those, by the way, to Lebanon and to Middle Eastern countries before our own Marine Corps can get theirs. They have to wait until December. And the whole story on that, by the way, is in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. If you want to read about this incredible pouring of arms into the Middle East, into all the nations down there, exactly in what quantities, what kinds of arms, and what the outcome is likely to be, then you need your name on the tabloid Plain Truth, coming out twice as often, twice as many articles, jam-packed with very exciting and interesting articles. Some of them will stand your hair on end. Others will make you smile and chuckle. Some of them might make you nearly want to cry when you read about some of the ironies of our day. And some of them are very inspiring. For example, in Bureau Reports, articles that tie in with current conditions are the alliance that could snap, what's happening right now between Western European capitals and that of the United States, how large quantities of American arms and military equipment are stockpiled in West Germany, and in the event of a new Mideast war, any United States attempt to resupply Israel would certainly involve drawing upon these stocks and transporting them from air bases and ports within West Germany. Yet that was the precise thing that led more directly to the Arab oil embargo against European countries, in particular West Germany, and also even the Netherlands, because a great deal of American military hardware flowed out of those air bases and military installations inside NATO bases in Europe in order to get it there more speedily during the Yom Kippur War. Now, such a move would run directly counter to West Germany's policy of strict neutrality in the Middle East. That was made quite clear in the past. Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, who is leader of West Europe's most powerful nation, recently said West Germany, quote, will not be drawn into conflicts, implying in the Middle East, against our will. And he quoted that as a result of the now very famous remark by Dr. Kissinger quoted in Business Week magazine when he said that Business Week reported that military force would not be ruled out to prevent actual strangulation of the industrialized world. There's an article in the Bureau Reports section right here on page 5 of the current number of the Plain Truth about how Bonds Mideast Balancing Act gets harder by the day. A lively controversy was stirred up recently when Gerhard Schroeder, who is Foreign Relations Committee Chairman of the West German Bundestag, returned from a surprise search for peace trip to the Middle East In Damascus, Syria, he conducted talks with Yasser Arafat, who was leader of the PLO, as you know. And upon his return to Germany, Schroeder drew unexpected criticism from Germany's Jewish community. But leaders of his own political party, the Christian Democratic Union, were not very happy with that self-appointed trip of his either. Particularly aggravating to them was the fact that he had not discussed beforehand with them his intentions of talking directly with Arafat. You begin to wonder what's going on, and you see what kind of unbelievable bad publicity that's going to get the new fledgling, in that sense, democratic experiment in Western Germany for the foreign minister to pop up in the Middle East and to hold private talks without even consulting his own party with, of all people, Yasser Arafat. So in Bonn, there are problems. Germany's close partnership with the United States, a sense of duty to the Jewish people, is just about being scrapped. When you see things like that happening, you wonder what the worldwide Jewish community is going to think of a leader of that status, of that top echelon stature in West Germany, holding private talks with Yasser Arafat. So this little tete-a-tete is very possibly an unofficial forerunner of what might be expected in the future. If you like a full report of that from Bonn, from our own man in our own bureau on the spot, that's in the current number of The Plain Truth. And also the question from Sydney about the courtship of Australia by the Shah of Iran. How Australia has signed a trade agreement with a major Middle East oil producer, that's Iran, which could add millions of dollars to Australia's annual trade income. Now, wait a minute, you people in the United States and Canada, don't get upset if you hear the Australians are trying to make a few extra millions by adding to the annual trade income of Australia by deals with Iran. If you're going to be listening to Pan-American ads these days, you might as well call it the PAA should probably stand for Pan-Arabian Airlines instead of Pan-American, or maybe it'd be should be called Pan-Arab American Airlines and should be PAAA. But at any rate, the only way apparently that virtual institution, almost like an historical institution of the United States and so rich in the history of the development of the early air routes around the world, that is the proud history of Pan-American. Yet today, it's going to take millions of dollars, maybe above $300 million, for Iranian interests to keep Pan Am flying. So shall we all pause for a moment of silent prayer while we thank the Shah of Iran for putting the pistol to his flying carpet and pouring kerosene into our 747s. The Ford administration has approved it, a complex agreement between Iran and Pan American World Airways under which the oil-rich Middle East country would bail out the company suffering from serious financial troubles. Why? Well, because Iran entered into this agreement with all of the other oil producers to jack the prices so far up out of sight, especially overseas, where the prices went way out of sight above and beyond even that of the United States. And Pan American has no Trans-American franchises. Most all of Pan Am's fuel is bought outside the United States. So why is Pan American in trouble? Rising Arab oil prices. Who comes to the aid of Pan-American? Well, not Arabs, because the Iranians are not Arabs, but they're Islam and their religion. And they are one of the OPEC and the major oil-producing countries of the Middle East. The details weren't disclosed, by the way, but the government of Iran is going to acquire somewhere around 13-15% of Pan-American stock. No dollar figure was placed on that, but they think it's somewhere around $300 million. It still requires the approval of the Civil Aeronautics Board, I think it's called, but I think that's just a matter of a formality, and you'll probably see it happen. The agreement would transfer 13-15% of Pan Am stock to Iran Air, and that's their own national airline over there, and it would give them about 50% of the stock in the subsidiary of Pan Am, which is the very, very wealthy Intercontinental Hotel chain. They've got hotels all around the world. There's one in Jerusalem, for example. There's one there in Beirut. They've got a huge one in Tokyo. They've got them all through Southeast Asia. Intercontinental is a famous worldwide hotel chain. That's a subsidiary of Pan Am, and they get 50%. The Iranians get 50% of those. And it would also put one Iranian on the membership of the board of directors of the Pan Am. So these sources of the airline industry said that somewhere around $55 million would be spent to purchase the controlling interest in Intercontinental Hotels. And I think that's just a part of the $300 million plus package. About the remainder of it would be to purchase that 13 to 15% of the stock. If you want to read also the article about Europe's 9, or is it going to become 7 or 10 or more? From Brussels, posted from our office there in the current number of The Plain Truth, it shows how political changes in Europe during 1974 have altered the pace of the move toward unity on the continent, and how right-wing regimes have disappeared in Portugal and Greece, opening long-closed doors to possible membership in the now 9-member European community. We have said for years there is coming a new power bloc in Central Europe, that eventually it's going to be 10 nations. Privately, I believe Britain will not be in it at that time. That's an opinion. We have felt Britain would never enter. And as recently as 3 years before she finally did, I was told by the private secretary of Kiesinger, when he was the chancellor of West Germany, that Britain would not be allowed in simply because the shock waves throughout the entire economic system of the common market by allowing Britain's obvious sick economy and sick productivity into the common market would be insurmountable for the rest of the partners. Well, somehow they resolved the difficulties, even over an awful lot of heated protest. It was just about 50% inside Britain. And to this day, of course, many British wish they should get back out of it. But whether she will stay in by the time a biblically predicted great power emerges in Europe is a moot question. I frankly doubt it. This article, posted from Brussels, the European headquarters of the EEC, shows how Greece, of all the potential new members, seems to have the inside track. It has a healthy head start so far as membership of the European Economic Community might go. An association agreement dating back from 1962, with full membership the announced goal, at the end of a 22-year-long transition period. That was frozen, though, when the famous colonels took over in 1967 in a coup d'etat in Greece. When the military in Portugal overthrew the dictatorship in April, ending nearly 50 years of one-party rule, one of the commissioners of the EEC said, "We wait with impatience for the moment when the democratic elected Portuguese government will apply for membership in the community." And then, of course, Spain is waiting in the wings, as is Turkey and Cyprus. You never know exactly who will be a part of that, but I think it's going to be very surprising when it finally fulfills the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel about a king of the north who moves directly into the Middle East at a time when, as the Bible describes, much of the wealth of the world is in the countries described in Daniel 11, verses 40 through the end of that chapter. Surprisingly enough, until the last few months of our modern space age, that prophecy, where it talks about gold and silver, could not have been understood in the way that it can be today. Now we see euro dollars and American dollars, the wealth of the wealthiest of the industrialized countries, literally pouring into the coffers of the Middle East. It's a strange world in which you live, and the only way to really keep in touch and in total feeling and grasp of all of these strange, conflicting things that are occurring around the world that don't seem to make sense is to have your name on the mailing list of The Plain Truth. To get all these features, the Bureau Reports, World Watch from around the world, these articles in the current number that really concentrate a great deal on what's happening in the Middle East and in Europe and what prophecy says. Art Buchwald's column is here, by the way, about biting your own bullet. And that column that has to do with some of these ignominious sales of weapons to Arab countries when our own armed forces can't get their hands on those sophisticated weapons, I think you ought to read. It's quite a lesson in irony. The Plain Truth is absolutely free of charge. It's coming out, as I said, tabloid. We've had to face some of the problems of inflation ourselves, but instead of going under, as many proud old magazines have done, and many newspapers have done, many newspapers, as you know, have totally changed their format. The LA Times has reduced its number of pages. The entire layout is different now. You'll notice the difference if you take that paper, no matter where you live, in the amount of advertising and the way it's spaced on the pages because of a reduction in newsprint and the soaring costs of newsprint, of ink, and of all costs related with printing. Well, instead of a slick magazine now of 52 pages, full color throughout, we've gone to a tabloid, and we're finding it's tremendously effective. The earlier pickup on newsstand programs in Britain was reported to be very, very encouraging. And from around the world, we've had an immediate response. People all over the world have written in to say how absolutely pleased they are with the shorter, harder hitting, straight from the shoulder, powerful impact of this new tabloid twice a month, Plain Truth, with upwards of 35 or 40 articles and features, political cartoons. There's a letter from the editor, my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, my own Speaks Out column in every single number. To give you an idea of what's in this current issue quickly, there's the article on the tidal wave of red ink strains the United States economy, the Bureau reports I mentioned to you, the continuing series of my father's new book, The Incredible Human Potential, The Missing Dimension in Knowledge, The Politics of Eternity, The History of Man is in Record of Religious Conflict, and Which Side Was God On in the Religious Wars of the Past, an article on Bombay, The Vision of India's Future, and also the article on how Britain tumbles down Europe's economic ladder, the Shah of Iran, the least of his worries, how to spend oil billions, and what he's doing with the billions he's earning. I started to tell you and to delineate some of the more than dozen shooting wars, large and small, in progress right now around the globe. Meanwhile, everybody crying for peace. North Ireland, still going on every single day and every week. Perhaps the bloodiest guerrilla warfare in all of urbanity is in its sixth year, with nearly 1,200 persons dead. It rose originally out of a Roman Catholic civil rights movement in the late 1960s because they wanted equality in jobs and other areas like housing. And the Protestant majority there, of course, began to react. So the underground IRA, the Irish Republic Army, has declared an indefinite ceasefire, but they can't control everyone, and just like any other guerrilla activity, shootings continue nevertheless. In Iraq, Kurdish tribesmen, who of course were promised years ago their own nation, because the Kurds, you know, actually occupy an area of three countries there, even on over into the Soviet Union. And in northern Iraq, they also occupy portions of Iran and portions of the Soviet Union. They've been at war there for half a century, demanding greater autonomy from the Iraqi government. In Ethiopia, Eritrean secessionists in Ethiopia's northern province have seized the countryside in a recent upsurge of fighting in their 13-year-old rebellion against the central government. The Ethiopian military government has denounced the rebels as bandits. So once again, the tiresome pendulum of leaping out of the arms of one terrible, stifling, despotic rulership into the arms of another one has occurred in Ethiopia. In the Philippines, Muslim rebels of the Mindanao Sulu region of the southern Philippines have been fighting for independence since the 16th century battles against Spanish colonizers. That's never stopped. It goes on every single day. In Burma, an increasingly active communist guerrilla movement and a number of rebel ethnic groups called Shans, Mons, Karens, and others have been fighting the central government for years. In Thailand, diplomats estimate that 7,000 communist insurgents, some with training in China and North Vietnam, conduct sporadic attacks in northern Thailand. In Malaysia, armed communist rebels operate in the jungles along the border between Malaysia and Thailand. In Taiwan or Formosa, nationalist and communist Chinese are still exchanging artillery fire every other day. That's the forgotten war we remember way, way back of Kemoy and Matsu, the Pescadores, still going on every other day. They dutifully walk up to those huge coastal rifles and exchange a few rounds. Usually no one is hurt, but nevertheless, they're shooting every other day. It's like a ritual. They wouldn't leave it off. It's like lighting candles or going to prayer meeting. You know, they just shoot at each other every other day. The shells contain usually propaganda material, though. They explode and come floating down in form of leaflets, or they blast a lot of propaganda material all over the countryside, and mostly in uninhabited areas. So why they do it? Well, I don't know. I guess they think that's the best way to deliver the mail. In Rhodesia, the Rhodesian government is negotiating for a peace settlement with black liberation movements that infiltrate guerrillas from neighboring African nations. Over 700 persons have died there in the last few years in this war in the bush that is little publicized. In Argentina, the Argentina army conducts periodic sweeps searching for rebels of the Marxist or left-wing revolutionary groups. Nearly 200 persons died in political violence there last year. In Malagasy, a lingering feud between lowlanders and highlanders on this Texas-sized island off the coast of Africa there, a former French colony. It's burst into shooting violence recently. One military ruler was assassinated. He'd only been in office for 6 days. and the future of the succeeding military junta is very uncertain. So around the world, wherever you look, while we talk of peace, we talk of defusing the incredibly complex situation of the world trembling on the brink of war, yet the United States remains one of the major traffickers in arms. And when it comes right down to a willingness to give up our toys, a willingness to totally alter and to change our lifestyle, which we have been warned over and over again is the only thing that is really going to see us through this crisis, we always prove that we are far more willing to pollute and to befoul our seas, bays, estuaries, rivers, our land, and our air, and to hang on to our toys, to junk our very sensationalized and widely publicized environmental programs, our anti-pollution programs, all of the noise we made, which is so much verbiage, which rhymes with garbage, which in itself is pollution, over the pollution problem, in which this program was out in the van in the forefront for so many years, even before much of the rest of the country took notice. We used to go to the AAAS meetings, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, way back in the 60s, and report to people about the incredible, massive air, water, and solid pollution that befouls our country. But once the Arabs cut off that earlier announced 11%, then 17%, then 20% of our oil, we began to see the pinch of the energy crunch in the early part of the winter of 1974. And gas rationing still speculated about, and prices soaring on up over 50 cents a gallon, 70 cents in some places, even a dollar here and there where they thought they could get away with it. Well, then very quickly we see that offshore oil or strip mining or gobbling up whole areas of the American West in the voracious maws of gigantically huge machinery so as to get shale oil and natural gas and geothermal energy and polluting our land with atomic energy plants that can be unbelievably harmful and potentially destructive. You ought to read the book that was years and years, I guess, ago, came out about that situation of the explosive bomb potential of some of these nuclear reactors if something goes awry. But very quickly we have proven where our lusts and our greeds are really going to lead us. Because if we are threatened with having to change our entire lifestyle, or keeping our lifestyle, we will befoul our nation and the entirety of the world, no matter what the consequences, to keep it going. Well, you ought to have your name on the mailing list of The Plain Truth and find out what Bible prophecy says about all these incredible events that continue to head this world right toward an inevitable World War III, and whether there's any way of protection for you and yours. You can have this current number that I've talked about. And while you're at it, request this booklet on how to understand prophecy.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.